Hey guys, it's Felicia. I am still somewhere in the world, vacationing, luxuriating, you know, just living my best life right now, trying to get my life together, y'all. And while I take this much needed respite, I have something fabulous for you. You don't want to miss this. Attorney Anitra is back with legal therapy. Attorney Anitra,
take it away.
Welcome back. My name is Attorney Anitra, and again, this is legal therapy. Qualify you before you qualify them. This is session 5. We are going through the acronym in CLARIFY. So far, we have already covered C, context, L, legacy, A, asset, R, rest, and today, in session 5, we're going to cover I. Impact.
Damn.
Yeah. If you're anything like me, you want to be influential wherever you go, but particularly in your professional career. You put in the work, you got the advanced degree. You even put in extra hours of studying and really being excellent at your craft. So why wouldn't you be able to walk inside of an organization and be somebody whose voice is respected and listened to? You know, a lot of us, particularly minority women, go into the workplace feeling like I finally have arrived and this is my opportunity to make a difference. But what often happens is that as you speak up, as your ideas go forth, as your recommendations for improvements hit the desk of your supervisor, they begin to turn a blind eye and close their ears to what you have to say. And before you know it, you're experiencing what can only be described as retaliation for even speaking up. How do you become an influencer? Well, I'm here to tell you that you might not become an influencer where you are. The truth of the matter is that you will not always be welcomed inside of an organization's culture. The truth of the matter is that despite all of the rhetoric about diversity, equity, and inclusion in an organization's commitment since the murder of George Floyd, despite all of that, they have not allowed for true change to happen.
Why?
So where does that leave you? A sitting duck? Just waiting for the discrimination claim to come down? I'm here to tell you that you have power. And even if you are not so central to the organization that you can influence its culture in your favor, that you do have impact. I want you to really let that sit. You have impact in every single organization that you join. Now, what that impact will actually be, that's your choice. And that's what we are going to unpack today. Let's go deeper. The definition of impact is to have an effect or an influence on something. Now, I could have used influence here, but I know the corporate playbook well enough to know that you can get confused, and you often do when you join an organization. You often think that you have a pathway of becoming somebody who the organization listens to, and that one day the culture will be able to reflect your values as well. And for many of us, we find that that is simply not the case. They might be able to check the diversity checkbox with your hire, but that does not mean that they really wanted to hear from you to the point where it changes how they do business. I have a framework, and it's called the 5 levels of employer value. The 5 levels of employer value. And on the very top of that scale is the influencer. The influencer is on the in crowd. You know, the popular kids. They typically don't have the skill that you would necessarily think that they have, but they do have really important skills, and they are social skills. These are the people that at the very top of the organization feel that they can trust. They feel supported by them. If you notice the change in leadership, how they will bring over a certain group of people, well, a good portion of those people, if not all of them, are influencers. They're able to speak something to the executive and be seriously considered. It's frustrating because people don't always know the reality of what they actually have access to influence-wise. So, you can be an influencer. Underneath that, the next employer value is a necessity. Now, this is where we usually are, and I've said this multiple times. If you go to any of my resources, you'll see this framework, because it's so true. But the necessity comes in highly skilled and, quite frankly, critical to operations. A lot of our diversity hires that we're seeing now fall into this category. And it's convenient, right? We really needed somebody who's skilled in this spot, and we found a diversity candidate to fill it. And it sounds like it should be a match made in heaven. But the problem is, you don't have anywhere to go after this. And if you try to behave like an influencer, you are going to be met with wrath. So necessity. The worker bee are the people who fill in those day-to-day activities that need to be filled. This is the scaling of the organization, and so you find multiple people, particularly in this role. And there's nothing wrong with being a worker bee, as long as you know that that's why you're there. And the problem with a worker bee is when they overestimate their value to the organization and begin to behave like a necessity and find that they're actually pretty dispensable. You might want to know if you're a worker bee or not. Easy way to find out, look around, see how many people in your position, look at turnover. Those are some key indicators that, yeah, people go in and out of this position. And also, go on vacation. That's an easy way to find out. A week or two, do things crumble when you're not there? Do you have influence enough to be able to delegate activities? If not, then you're probably a worker bee. Underneath the worker bee is the nuisance. The nuisance is kind of like the worker bee, but they don't really contribute that much to the organization. However, it would be more of a nuisance, hence the word, to get rid of them than it is just to keep them. They do work sometimes, and it's less drama just to keep them around. Lastly, the last employer value is the liability. The liability proposes a direct threat to the organization. And unlike the nuisance, it is very expensive to keep this person around. The liability is able to get their hands on evidence that proves that the employer has been operating in any particular way that may be damaging if exposed. So once you are labeled as a liability, you are on a quick exit out of the organization. What? And oftentimes what happens is that you come in as a necessity, a diversity hire, you're excited, you behave like an influencer, however, and you begin voicing opinions that are unpopular. You quickly bypass being a worker bee because they'll take away your task and things that are important. They'll look for your replacement. You'll quickly become a liability and on an exit plan right out of the organization. So I've explained this time and time again, and the reason why I'm explaining it and clarify you isn't to really teach you how to go up and down that value system. That'll be later when we're qualifying employers. I bring this up because what happens is that even though you are not at the top, you are not an influencer, you might be a necessity or a worker bee, but you still have power on the inside. My clients discover this because as they come to me, full of anxiety and uncertainty, and their nervous system is telling them that they are in fact in danger, what I begin to show them is that they still have power. They can still affect and have an effect on the organization. I'll give you an example. I had a past client who came to me very distraught. I'd never had a client come to me crying the way this particular client did, just very emotionally distraught. And of course, this was early on in my career. I wanted to jump in and help out. What could be causing, you know, this client such trouble? And this person was very affirming to me. They had a career in education. They thought I was brilliant. And as I was returning work to them, as we moved forward the case, this person would grade my paper, like my actual memos that I'm sending to government agencies, and give me A+. And I could tell that this person was a good person at their core. But what this person also didn't realize was the impact that they had on the organization that they were at and were now in a fight with. I began to notice that my client had the penchant, the tendency to runneth client's mouthith at work. Against my wishes, against my advice, against my counsel. And it was very much so centered on their greatness, their prestige, how they should or should not be treated. And whereas I believed and I agreed that you shouldn't treat people a certain way, I also saw how this person's language and demeanor at work was creating this effect where if the organization had a choice between treating this person respectfully or dogging them out, they chose dogging them out. Now, I'm not saying that you deserve bad treatment. What I'm saying is that the way you behave, who you are, what you bring to the workplace has an impact one way or the other, and you need to make a conscious choice of what type of impact you would like to have. Ideally, the impact that you have is that you stood on your standards, you did your job with excellence, and when push came to shove, you were not given a fair opportunity to become an influencer. If they put you at a particular value and they refuse to let you out of that box because of something that you can't change, your gender, your race, your religion, they used something that was unfair and protected by law in particular to say that you cannot have access to how we influence the organization. I heard of a story of an executive, and I might have told you guys this story already. I apologize if it's a repeat, but it's relevant here as well. But he actually sought out one of his diverse employees and asked him to come and give him advice on how to make the environment, the organization, more inclusive. And what this person told the executive listened to and implemented. And the organization changed. That employee became an influencer.
Blood hell.
You have power. When we come back, I'm going to tell you another story about a client who had an incredible amount of power. And I'm going to show you what you can do to channel the impact that you do have into something that works for you, whether or not your organization wants you to be an influencer. It doesn't matter. You can still have an impact. I'll talk to you soon. If you haven't already, I want you to check out my webinar about the 3 secrets of figuring out how to put a case together, protecting your paycheck and protecting your peace. In the webinar, I talk about how you can distinguish if you have a case or not, and what to do if you think that you do, how to start putting that case together. Go ahead, click the link below, and I'll see you in the webinar. Welcome back. We are in session 5 of Clarify You Before You Qualify Them, talking about impact is the I in Clarify. We just spoke about the 5 levels of employer value, where you fall on that, but also the realization that you carry power inside of you. You are impacting your organization, either for the better or for the worse, and it's time for us to make conscious decisions about our impact at work. How are we going to affect the workplace? Now, this takes what's called a cultural assessment. I'm talking to MBAs, I'm talking to professionals. My background, I have a master's of public administration, but anytime you study organizations, they begin to tell you how you go in to assess the culture around you. And one of the things I want you to take a look at, I want you to take a look at the 5 levels of employer value. I want you to say, okay, who's an influencer? Who's a necessity? Who's a worker bee? Who's a nuisance? Who's a liability? Hint, 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 you don't see liabilities around for too long. Once you take this assessment, and this just means just taking a moment to observe what's going on around you. Take a look at the emails. Who's emailing back and forth? Ask around, who's scared of who? Ask around, who's usually the one who gets to go on vacation and not do much work? Who's the most influential executive? Who's the admin who is actually pushing through all the paperwork? You really start to be able to identify very quickly the culture of your particular organization. And that's important because that can be a great predictor of the type of issues that you are going to face in the future. For example, I had a client who identified with the LGBTQIA+ community, was an advocate. And for all intents and purposes, this organization stood for being an ally, stood for supporting this community. So my client, when they came to me, had been placed on a performance improvement plan. And written down in black and white was the fact that my client had routinely stood up for issues involving their community. And I thought it was curious that the attorney in this investigation would feel comfortable writing that level of detail about why they're putting this person on an improvement plan. Come to find out that my client, in fact, had a long history of standing up for people who were wronged in a workplace. Had a long history of standing up for gender equality and dignity. My client then saw something that was going on at the client level and blew the whistle and said, hey, this makes me concerned for even my safety here if you're so willing to be dismissive of something that's going on with our clients. And apparently the attorney thought that, well, that didn't have anything to do with their job. So, you know, we put them on a PIP. There are issues with that on a technical legal side that I explained to said attorney. And we came up with an agreement on what was going to happen to my client. But even though my client was not an influencer per se, my client spoke, it wasn't like the executives jumped and did what they said. But my client absolutely had an impact on that organization. My client absolutely was able to stand up and stand for something. And it created such a vibration in the organization that there was so much tension. And not to say that the goal is to go and get everybody walking on pins and needles. That wasn't the point. The point was that although they pledged their allegiance to the community, they were not standing by that. Needless to say, my client quickly became a liability, no longer with the organization. But that organization learned a lesson. And I know I hope that the lesson influenced their future decisions. But here's the thing, it's not always going to change an organization. Oof, let me say that again.
The impact that you leave on an organization might not change anything.
This is a really important message to understand. When I'm working with my clients and we are strategizing and we're talking about what they want and different ways we can fashion their settlement package. They might say something to me like, I just want it to be better for the next person. It might not be. In fact, it's likely that nothing is going to change other than them tightening up the way they discriminate against people. I don't want you to feel that you failed, however. If an entire organization has been around for decades, if not hundreds of years in some situations, doesn't completely change just because you stood up and said, no, don't do that to me. Now, it's my vision that with legal therapy, enough people in this country learn these strategies so that it becomes the norm for employees to stand up and say, nope, I caught you on that. I'm calling you out. You need to fix it or pay me because work has stopped working. When it becomes a critical mass of us who know this information, yeah, then we can start moving change. But in the meantime, I want you to know that your impact is still very real. You still carry power on the inside of you. You can still get your organization to answer you. You can still leave your mark on an organization that I was here, I stood up for myself, I stood up for others. And if you choose not to do anything with it, that's on you. But I did what I was supposed to do. In some cases, it can change things for the better. But I just want you to release yourself from the burden of feeling that that's your responsibility. Like I talked in Legacy, I don't want you to be enemy-centered. I don't even want you to have the whole world on my shoulders centered. You have the power inside of you, and I want you to acknowledge it, make peace with it, and then wield that so that you are taking care of yourself. And it might seem selfish to get the bag, get the settlement check, and not say anything. But I'm telling you, enough people with this information and an organization knows like, okay, that person is not an anomaly, but now it's the norm, then they will change. So get your money and then pass on legal therapy. I remember being in law school and feeling really, really dejected. I mean, law school is horrible. It's like 3 years of hazing. And I love my law school and the people in it, but I went to a predominantly white law school after coming from a historically black college. And I remember just feeling so depressed at times. I wasn't at the top of my class, although I was used to being at the top of my class. I was excited about the work of being an attorney, but I didn't really see the connections to what we were doing in class. And I started to feel very disconnected from why I even went to law school, which was to advocate for people, my people. So I had the opportunity going into my second year of law school to join our student pro bono program. And its mission was all the stuff I came to law school to do. Advocating for our people in our community. We were here to engage our student body and educate them on pro bono opportunities and connect people in the community with our attorneys who are up and coming. So I join it. My second year, we do nothing as an organization. As it turns out, we had no pro bono program. We were like fundraising and trying to raise money just so we could use the money to make sandwiches for homeless people. I believe in feeding the homeless. I do. I did not believe, however, that we as law students who had the power to practice in a limited way with supervision should be using that privilege on something that was community service but wasn't legal pro bono work. All pro bono work is community service, but not all community service was pro bono work. So I remember getting ready to quit, and I gave a presentation so they could just see the difference. And I gave them a theme that we could use for our organization. But really, the whole point of my presentation was I was about to quit if they didn't stop this. But not only did they like the presentation, they adopted the theme, but they also voted me to be the director of this program. So in my last year of law school, I was now the student director of this program. Now, I wanted to make an impact. Could I get everybody to follow me? No, I didn't think I could. What I did was I made a goal. I wanted to see 5 programs up and running. And I noticed that there were some behaviors. I was talking about this book that I read one day while perusing Barnes & Noble, which is very much so like me. I came across a book called Influencer by Joseph Grinney. And in this book, it talked about how you can spot vital behaviors. And when it comes down to it, to really make any real change, it usually comes down to 1 or 2 vital behaviors. Man, I had not heard that before, but the social scientist in me was just going crazy. I knew there was truth to it. And so I put it to test. I sat back and I looked at what was going on with our pro bono counsel. How come a school that had been open for over 30 years, it was a relatively young law school, but still, no pro bono programs. The only project was being ran out of the Hispanic Law Student Association, but our official pro bono program didn't have anything in it. So as I took a step back, I realized that we would have these meetings with community partners, get really excited about a potential project, and then nothing. Nothing. So I devised a system. I said, okay, first and foremost, I'm going to provide a questionnaire. I'm going to create it. And using my event planning experience, I'm going to lead them through in a meeting all the questions you need to ask to get this project off the ground. So I created a questionnaire. Then I noticed that after the meeting, it would not move through any kind of chain of command to get funded and implemented. So I created a flowchart of everybody who needed to see this information, and I created a proposal. So we went from the questionnaire to a proposal, and we sent the proposal through certain departments, faculty committees, all the way up to the administration, so the dean could approve it and fund it. Because I made a stand, I said, we are not fundraising for this. If my law school is serious about service, then our administration will pay for us to be able to have pro bono projects at our school. I had a group of 10 people in my pro bono council. I charged each and every one of us to have at least 1 community meeting that resulted in a proposal, and we could send 10 proposals to administration with the goal of getting at least 5 of them approved. By the end of that first year, which was my last year in law school, we had 5 active pro bono projects. I passed that system on. I've been out of law school for almost a decade. Yikes. But guess what? Now my law school has anywhere from 13 to 15 pro bono projects operating throughout the year. And a handful of years ago, it fueled the creation of a standalone community law clinic that now sits in a historic area of our city. Our dean of our law school, our dean emeritus, has written reference letters for me that tell people that that has changed hundreds, if not thousands, of lives and changed the very city that our law school is in. So, taking a step back and looking at some vital behaviors that you can influence, you can make an impact. You might not be a cultural influencer explicitly. You might not be on the in crowd, but you can change things. You might not always. You might not always have the situation like I had at my law school. But for the clients who come to me, you usually have one of these experiences. You usually have an experience where you have invested so much of yourself and you've made something incredible happen at work. That can still happen even in the face of barriers to getting to the very top. Balance this with what we talked about with rest. and quiet quitting. Because if you determine that you're in an organization that doesn't deserve that level of work, that's your determination. But you have power. And if I can just get you to think of anything, is what do I want my impact to be? That's your choice. And what is my impact actually? Like in real life, how am I currently impacting my organization? If you do this, along with the cultural assessment, if you know where you are on the employer value chain, then you'll be able to make a more conscious decision about where you want to put your effort, where you want your impact to be. Now, I can take my impact from my law school, and you know, that's always going to be one of my stories. It's one of the greatest things that I'm proud of, honestly, because I wanted to change a community. Now, am I a cultural influencer at my school? I mean, I've sat on boards and the boards of visitors, so I did begin to make my way up as a cultural influencer at my school. That is true. But then when you move on to your next organization or your next project, you might not have that same level of influence. And the question is, what are you going to do? So you have the power inside of you. You have an impact, and I want you to begin making really conscious decisions about what your impact could be. And then draw the line. What are you not willing for your impact to be? Thanks so much for tuning in. This has been Impact, Session 5 of Legal Therapy with Attorney Anitra. Next time, in Session 6, we are going to be talking about frame. It's not what you think it is. Until next time, be well.